Hi, this is Michelle Boyd, and you are listening to the Rated NA podcast at nerdappropriate.com because you're cool.
Hey there, welcome to episode 127 of the Rated NA podcast for the website nerdappropriate.com. We are down two members today. Hillary is actually, where is she? Oh, she's at Stanley's Kamikaze.
Yeah.
And Matt ate too much Halloween candy and he's been vomiting for days on end.
Rainbow vomit, right?
Rainbow vomit, too much, too many Butterfingers, I think.
Is it, maybe it's candy corn colored.
Oh.
You know, those are the spectrum, rainbow spectrum colors.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we just went through Halloween. And what did you do for Halloween?
I didn't really get swept up in the Halloween spirit, but So I just went to like this little dive bar to watch football, but it was hilarious because it was like a Miami Dolphins bar and the Dolphins were playing.
Oh yeah,
and every time they scored, like they play like the fight song from the 70s, which is completely ridiculous.
Nice. So. Nice. Yeah, I was one of those crotchety old couples that handed out candy to kids. Oh, I did have something cool happen though. I was wearing my Skyrim hat that has the horns on it, you know, mm-hmm. And I was handing out candy to kids, and there was probably a kid that was like 3 or maybe 4 years old. And I opened the door and handed him some candy, and he pointed up at me and went Skyrim, and I was like. How the hell do you know?
That's amazing.
How do you know about Skyrim? And like his parents are out there, you know, smiling like, yeah, we're nerds too.
So cool. Did you get a lot of people to your house?
Not a ton. We had maybe 25 kids total, you know, maybe 4 or 5 different groups. So not a lot. We have so much fucking candy left over. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. That's the scary part is like now you've got buckets of candy. And
Yeah, absolutely.
You're going to be like in a sugar coma or something.
Yeah.
Let's do the rundown.
Well, we do have a special episode this week. We interviewed Michelle Boyd a while ago, Michelle from Teen Unicorn and The Guild and a number of other projects. And we're actually going to be airing that interview on this episode 127. So it was a lot of fun, and so if you listen to the entirety of this episode, you'll hear that. And
sounds good. Okay, so should you start? What have you been up to? It's just the two of us.
It's so weird, right?
Yeah.
Tagging off.
It's like, am I just supposed to pick myself? Hey, Scott, what have you been doing?
Yeah, right. It's so fucking weird with two people. You know, I've still, God, this is, I'm sorry for our listeners. I've still been playing some GTA 5. I'm still running around like crazy. In the Halloween spirit, I caught up on Walking Dead. And some really crazy stuff's been going on this season of The Walking Dead. Without any spoilers, there's like a new like plague. If things couldn't get worse, without, you know, there's a zombie apocalypse. Now there's something like kind of akin to the bubonic plague going throughout their camp.
Wow.
Killing people all willy nilly. And of course, when people die from the bubonic plague, they come back as zombies. So it's just like kind of like this ticking time bomb sort of scenario that they have going on in the show. So that's been really good. I think this season's going to be great on Walking Dead.
Awesome. Have you been watching Grimm at all?
No, man, I'm still on season one of Grimm.
My God.
I know. It's one of those shows that it's on my list that I'll catch up to eventually. But
okay.
My wife and I are watching Breaking Bad right now, and we're on season 4.
Oh, okay.
We watched 4 seasons pretty in like about a week.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was playing GTA 5 and watching I was watching Breaking Bad and playing GTA 5 in the same week. And I got really like dark.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, that must be really depressing.
It was really dark, but but anyway, it's been a fun couple weeks. Looking forward to having the whole gang back on. And what have you been doing, Scott?
Well, since I'm finishing up my schooling, if you will, I've been catching up on all the games that I never played when I was busy with school. So, like I mentioned before, I've been playing Batman Arkham City, which is really great. I think what I realized is how similar this game is to Assassin's Creed, or maybe that's the other way around. I'm not really sure. But I feel like some of the activities I do in this game feel more meaningful, maybe because there's more of a story to draw on, like an established narrative, you know?
Yeah, yeah. No, I agree. I think while there is still a lot of collecting and stuff like that, some of it's actually really fun to do. Like, because the gliding dynamic in Arkham City is actually really fun.
Oh, it's phenomenal. Flying around the city is amazing.
It's so much fun. So you actually kind of want to do that. You want to collect stuff just to see if you can pull off some of the, you know, the aerial acrobatics and such. So I thought that was really neat. But I do feel like, you know, in the Assassin's games, it's gotten to the point where there's so much, so many little things to collect and such, it just kind of detracts from the overall experience.
Well, yeah, I mean, anytime there's like a side story in these games, there's like some, you know, Batman villain associated with it that you already know, you know, so there's already kind of like something there to motivate you to like follow up on these side quest missions, you know?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So really enjoying that. I also started playing Torchlight 2, which is a game I bought a long time ago, and I really enjoyed the first Torchlight, and this one, to me, just seems like it's, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. It's
Absolutely.
Really, like, bigger and badder, like, more improvements upon the previous game, and it's great, obviously. I think it's got multiplayer. I don't know if anyone's still playing it or has it or whatever, but, like, I'm lurking around on Steam from time to time playing that.
I've only ever played that at shows, like on show floors.
And Torchlight?
I played the first one quite a lot. I actually played the first one on 360.
Oh, wow.
Then the Torchlight 2, I realize it's not coming to 360, but
right.
I do plan on playing it eventually. I love that series a lot. I think it's a lot of fun.
It might be on sale right now on Steam. I don't know if that benefits our listeners. You know, it might not be on sale by the time you hear it, but you know, definitely during the holidays, I'm sure it'll pop up again.
Cool.
And then, you know, like I mentioned, I'm watching Grimm, which is incredible. I'm getting caught up on TV, too. So, like, the shows I'm following this year are Grimm, Revolution, Once Upon a Time. And then I'm really looking forward to that Almost Human, that new J.J. Abrams joint that's coming up in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Really, you know what I'm kind of sorry to say that I haven't been watching as Person of Interest, and now I'm hearing it's getting really, really good. And I kind of want to start that show as well. I think it's only on season
I'm just hesitant because it's on
four.
CBS. You know, I'm worried that it'll be too formulaic.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it does have good old Amy Acker on it, so.
Oh, well, count me in. Maybe I can watch like a catch-up and then just pick it up where she enters the show.
That's true. Yeah, need to do that.
Yeah, so there you go. That's cool. That's my story.
Okay, so enjoy our interview with Michelle Boyd. She has a really awesome history. We talk about everything from her background in neurobiology to getting a gig on the Guild. And
oh,
of course,
that's crazy, man.
It is.
Sorry I missed that one.
No, really. And Team Unicorn, all sorts of really fun stuff that she's been doing. This interview is different. Scott was not there. What were you off doing? You were off causing trouble.
Yeah, I think I was doing some work-related function.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So, yeah, you were not there. Hillary was on the interview. Matt was on the interview. I was on the interview. And our friend Mylan was on the interview as well. So it's going to be the four of us and Michelle. And then when we come back, we'll talk about some news. So we're here actually with Michelle Boyd, who we have known for quite some time. Thank you so much for coming on, Michelle. How are you doing?
I'm really good. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we, this is going to sound stalkery, but we've known you for a while now because we...
Oh, God.
I know. And then we follow you everywhere. No, but we... I kept,
oh, my God,
I,
that was you!
That was me, yeah. That sounds
Speak
horrible.
For yourself, Ash.
That's true. So I run into you guys all the time at conventions, and this year I ran into you, and I was like, I can't believe we actually haven't had you on the show yet. So it turns out that you said yes after I asked to have you on the show, which worked out pretty well because it wasn't awkward with you saying no. But how's everything going? Like, what have you been up to?
It's going really well. With Team Unicorn, we're doing the show with Adult Swim. That's still in development, but that's getting closer and closer to looking like it's actually going to go forward. So we're all really super excited about that. And then for me, you know how Hollywood is. There's always like a couple projects that you have going in the works that you think are going to go ahead right away and then take like 6 months to come out. But I'm personally tired of waiting, so I got started on producing kind of my own series of horror shorts.
Oh, that's awesome.
Ooh. Yeah, I think so. I think it'll be really fun. There was a Reddit thread a couple months back where they just kind of put it out to everyone and just said, hey, write a scary story in two sentences. And it got pretty popular. And
I saw that. Yeah.
And I'm reading through them and I'm like, and I'm just seeing all of them in my head. And I was like, these should really be filmed. So I'm going to kind of film the easiest one that I think is the easiest one to do and then kind of throw it up and do a Kickstarter. And hopefully when this podcast airs, the Kickstarter will be going. So give me money. I want to make stuff.
No, that's awesome. And we'll definitely talk more about the whole Kickstarter campaign and stuff a little bit later. But
I've supported things, but I've never done anything myself. So it'll all be new to me.
Yeah, absolutely. There's some awesome stuff on Kickstarter too. And all of us here have definitely thrown some money at some projects that we've really loved. Mm-hmm. And I think it really is. I mean, it is a great way for creatives to actually get their stuff made. So I'm glad it's out there. You know, I'm definitely glad it's out there.
That and Indiegogo, and you know, I'm glad that these things exist, because back in the day it was really just kind of okay, put up a PayPal button and kind of hope for the best, which is not a bad idea, because you know, if you just want to throw any dollar amount at something that you like, you know, it can be more convenient, and it's also, I'm sure it's more convenient for the people doing the projects, because then they don't have to figure out, okay, well, at $25 they're going to get a poster, and at $100 they'll get a DVD and in rewards and stuff, and instead you can kind of just support things on their own. But I definitely see the value in both, and it's nice to have something structured, set up that people can trust and know that, you know, the money's going to where it should be.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things we really love doing when we have people on is kind of getting to know about their past and getting, you know, a little taste of their origin story, so to speak. You have a really unique one. it's kind of crazy. And
you mean where I climbed the mountains and learned ninja techniques from Ra's al Ghul and had to find this really weird blue flower?
It's really it's not too far off from that. Because I mean, I was reading about it, because every time I have somebody on, I read about them to make sure I know what the fuck I'm talking about. So let's just start at the very beginning. You were born in Florida, where a couple of us are right now. So we're in Central Florida, but you weren't actually there for very long, right?
Yeah, I was there for probably under a year. I have a Navy family. So my dad was in the Navy and moved us every like 2 or 3 years. So I never stayed in one place for very long, which I personally loved.
Mm-hmm. So you traveled a lot, obviously, as a kid. And mm-hmm. from the records I've been checking, you... I know.
Wow.
That's why I said stalkery, right? It's like, well, this is what you got to do.
He has like a dossier on you.
I do.
Between research and stalker. Fine line. Very fine line.
It's a really fine line. Damn it. Anyway, so you were in Italy for a while and Japan for a while, correct?
Yes. Yeah. I went from, if you want the timeline, it was Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Japan, San Diego, Davis. Oh, sorry, I missed Italy. Italy was for a summer in there somewhere. Davis, DC, Boston, LA.
That's wild. How do you think that changed you as a person? The fact that you were constantly on the move, like, I mean, you said you felt pretty positively about it, but
I learned how to lie really well. Like, it was just every 3 years you could be like a new name, a new backstory. No, it was really fun. You become kind of. I mean, for me, it just meant I was very outgoing all the time. And, you know, you just kind of got used to the impermanence of it all. So it was very weird for me when I moved to San Diego, and my parents divorced. So my dad kept moving and my sister and I stayed in San Diego. So I got to be in San Diego for all of middle school and high school. And it was weird for me because suddenly I was around people who weren't Navy brats and weren't military people and had known each other their entire lives. So it was kind of strange transition there. But then, you know, ever since then, it's been going back to the to the traveler life.
Yeah, right.
And in LA, you know, I mean, like, you're surprised if someone's been here for more than 5 or 6 years. You're kind of like, ah, well done. Good on you.
You survived. You survived.
It really is just about that. I've had a lot of people ask me, you know, like, what's advice you would give to someone, you know, who wants to come out to LA and be an actor or anything? I'm like, you plan on at least 10 years. Just plan on that. If you're not planning on that, then don't even bother.
I mean,
you could absolutely move here and make it after a month of being here. It happens, but more than likely, you're going to have to be here for quite some time before you kind of get to the point where you're steadily working. So if you're not willing to at least like even embrace that idea, yeah, just don't even try.
Yeah, from a lot of the actors and actresses we've spoken to, there's definitely, it's sort of a trial by fire. You know, once you're there, you have to get used to a lot of rejection and really kind of constantly being judged, which I think a lot of people aren't really ready for. Mm-hmm. That's a hard thing. I mean, in any career, but I think with acting in particular, like you were really sort of under the microscope in front of a group of people, having your technique and your performance really judged, and like the rejections close to immediate, you know, you can kind of tell, I'm assuming.
Well, actually, you know, as far as the rejection's concerned, that's almost the worst part of it, because they don't reject you right away. They always do the same thing of, oh, great, that was awesome. Okay, you know, have a good day. And then you never hear from them again.
Oh,
you more than likely, you have no idea when you come out of an audition. You're like, half the time when you think you did terrible, those are the jobs you book.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, all the time. It's funny though, cause I used to model when I was in Italy and, you know, when I was younger. And if you want to talk about rejection and you want to talk about judging, acting's nothing.
Wow. Like,
yeah.
It's nothing compared to the rejection and the scrutiny and the criticism you get when you model.
And that's direct, right? At least in LA, it's kind of.
Yeah, that's to your face. Yeah. They don't even, and it's funny because it's not even the same feeling, because it's almost not to your face. They kind of talk over you. They just talk about you. You just happen to be in the room while they're doing it.
Oh my gosh.
Trying not to cry.
Yeah, it's a little weird, but it doesn't really have anything to do with you as a person at all.
Yeah.
It's just kind of how you look and how you walk, and it's a weird, weird feeling. So acting, being rejected for acting is, it's almost better and it's almost worse, because they're rejecting you for something you did, like a performance that you gave. So that makes it a little bit more personal. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you get a job or you get approval, then it also means more.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, I don't know how people do that. I definitely could not. I mean, not that I would ever be hired for a modeling job. But
you don't know.
We're looking for a sleepy looking guy who's kind of walks like a duck.
Oh, no.
But I mean, that's awesome that you were able to actually do that and you had the self-confidence to be able to pull it off. Prior to that, and the reason I asked this question is because our own Matt was a swimmer for a long time, and I saw on your profile that you were a competitive swimmer for a number of years. How long did you do that for?
Since I was six, all the way through high school. And I could have competed in college, but they take it so seriously. And at that point, I wanted to graduate in 4 years, and I needed a job, and I needed to do internships to, you know, have work after college. So it wasn't going to work out. But yeah, I've been pretty much swimming my entire life. Nice thing about Navy is you're always near water.
Oh, that's true. Matt, how didn't you drop doing it right around the end of high school as well?
Yeah, it was the same. I started when I was like four, and I went all the way through high school and had an opportunity to go to college and swim, but I was honestly just burned at that point. At like 12 or 14 years of doing it, you're just kind of like, I don't want to do this.
You're a little bit burned out. It was great, but it's like, and it's also, you can't do it on your own anymore. Like, I can't swim for exercise on my own. I need someone yelling at me, like an interval clock.
Were you like completely broken for playing in the water with like your friends? Like, they'd be like, let's go to the beach. And you just kind of would sit there like, this feels weird just sitting in the water. I don't know what I'm doing right now.
No, I was totally able to enjoy that.
It was gone. And then my friends always would want to race me. It was like the weirdest thing. It was like, let's race. And I'm like, I don't want to race. Like, this is what I do. I don't want to do this right now.
I'd be like, my reaction would be like, you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You don't. Don't do yourself. What did you swim?
When I was young, it was backstroke. And then when I got older, I was mid distance. So like 500
I couldn't do it. I was a sprinter. I couldn't. the endurance ones.
It was like a weird mind game thing for me because I'm not like, yeah. I'm not huge. Like, so if you've ever met me, I'm like 5'9". I'm not a big guy. And I would get up on the block next to dudes that are like 6 foot and ripped and from somewhere else. And I'm like, all right, let's do this. And then
one of our fastest guys was, I think, 5'8", 5'9". But yeah. Same deal. Like, he would be next to all of our other guys who were like 6'1".
Yeah.
It's just crazy. It's a weird thing.
Yeah, I loved it though. I mean, I did. It just was, by the time I hit college, yeah. I was done.
Well, it's just nice. I mean, it's nice to be part of something that you're just kind of naturally good at. And I mean, you know, yes, you're naturally good at it because you've been swimming since you could walk.
Yeah.
But time, it's kind of cool. It's you know, it's fun to be good at something.
Well, and that's actually a good segue into my next question. You know, you said that you moved around a lot and had to kind of assume your identity, but maybe in a new way. Is that kind of what made you want to start acting?
I think so. You know, actually, I feel like what wanted me, that was not English at all.
it's okay.
What started me wanting to do acting, I think, was actually all the reading I did. I was always a really big bookworm and, you know, had the book hidden under the desk. And, you know, you get taken to all of these worlds that people write about and you just kind of want to be that, and short of actually being a certain thing, the next best thing is to play one on TV. Mm-hmm. So if you talk to a lot of actors, I feel like it's much the same thing. You know, we all just, we're like, we want to, you know, I want to be a ninja. I want to be a firefighter. I want to be an astronaut. I want to be, you know, a secret agent. You're like, well, I can't actually be all of those things. So fake it.
Yeah, I mean that's the part of acting that I think is so unique and awesome. Because when you're acting in a scene, you're believing it and you are being that person. So yeah. I think that's really cool.
Yeah, and a lot of it is just about, you know, at the heart of it, for, you know, 90% of the roles out there, it's still a person. And so you kind of have to figure out, you know, what they're thinking and why they would react to something the way that they do and why they would make the decisions. And, you know, it all kind of goes back to, if you play a bad guy, nobody sees themselves as a bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
You have to kind of
love,
you know,
that.
Yeah. And it's really, really, it's always been really interesting to me to figure out kind of the motivation behind people's actions and what, and like their thought process and everything. And that kind of goes hand in hand.
Cool. So I saw on IMDb that Untold Stories of the ER was your first TV role, which I love that you listed that on your bio.
Oh my God.
I actually worked on that show. I worked at TLC for the network, maybe at the same time. I've worked on it off and on for a long time. But yeah, so I'm curious what your experiences were like on that show.
That was really funny because I did get to be one of the, you know, main characters on it. And it's just, I played a professional beach volleyball player. So I think the funniest part of it for me was that I was not nearly tan enough. So they had to spend half an hour spray tanning me for it.
That is awesome. What happened to you?
I came in with like a broken arm, but it turned out I think they were trying to be like House. They were kind of like, it was kind of based on a real story. And I don't think he was a beach volleyball player. I think it was a different sport, but this person had come in with some injury and it turned out that they had been taking like a steroid type drug that actually ended up causing like a congenital like heart failure in the person. Yeah. Like the whole moral of the story is like, don't take drugs. Your heart give out on you.
I thought you were going to say that one of your volleyball arms was just like really huge from the steroids. Like you had like one Hulk arm and one normal arm.
I was getting the worst superpower ever.
Yeah, just one massive arm.
That'd be an entirely different show, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think so. You'd see that show now
with
all the superhero stuff going on. Yeah, it was fun because the doctor that came on and played the doctor was an actual doctor. And they had a lot of the real, it was a mixture of real people and, you know what I mean? Like real, like people in their real professions as doctors and nurses and stuff, and then actors.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was fun. I was just, you know, you'll, as an actor, especially when you start out, you're just like, I will do any job you want to pay me for. Absolutely. TV, well, sure.
That segues really well into
the story
that I have. Because when I'm not doing nerd appropriate stuff, I'm a high school teacher and I teach history. And I was looking up stuff about the Inquisition, and I was looking up stuff about you know, the guillotine and different torture tools and stuff like that, and I'm looking for YouTube videos to show my class.
Oh gosh.
And this is after I knew you, so this is after I met you. So I'm at work and I'm looking through, you know, on my plan period, looking through picture videos and stuff, and so I stumble across this video from Machines of Malice,
most morbid show ever,
which is all about like decapitation and the Iron Maiden and like all these horrible inquisitorial like tools of death, and there you are it was crazy, and I was like, what? And I was like, wait, I'm like, that's Michelle Boyd. And then it's like, Michelle Boyd, neurobiologist. And I was like, what the fuck? Like, I had no idea. So then, like, stalkery, I'm like, is this bullshit? I'm like, is this real? But you do have a degree in neurobiology, which is really fascinating. So I want to know how that happened. Because, I mean, we talked about, you know, you're an athlete, you're a model, and then neurobiology. So how do we get to there?
Well, it was funny when I was in school. You know, I did the whole thing of I have no idea what I want to do when I grow up.
So it's
weird to talk about falling into neurobiology, but it really kind of happened that way. I'm not kidding. I think a lot of it was based on reading Jurassic Park. I'm really not kidding. It was the sequel to Jurassic Park, it was Lost World, which is so much better than the movie. It's not even funny. The book Lost World has a field biologist in it named Sarah Harding, and she went out and she was studying the behavior of I think hyenas in Africa or something. And I was like, that's what I want to do. I want to do that. I want to go to Africa. I want to go study big cats. I want to study animal behavior. And that kind of turned into, well, maybe I could be a vet. No, I don't think I could be a vet.
Yeah.
It's harder to be a vet than it is a doctor, or to get into vet school, at least.
Wow. Yeah, I heard there's very few schools and like very few positions.
There's only 27.
Interesting.
Hillary knows this off the top of her head.
I do. I actually got accepted to Davis to go into vet school. And it is only like at the time 27. I think there's 28 now. It's super hard.
Yeah, I mean, congratulations.
Thanks. I didn't end up becoming a vet.
because that's where I went to school, and that was partially why I went there for undergrad, is because I was thinking about going to the vet school afterward, and then I realized, oh, this is really hard, and I'm not entirely sure that's what I want to do. So no, congratulations on getting in. It's super difficult. And then, you know, a part of it was also, I didn't want to work on sick animals. I wanted to study healthy behavior. And that kind of segued into, well, you know, I was always curious about what in the brain makes things behave the way they do. And that kind of went from, you know, animals to people, and it's really not that far of a jump. When you think about psychology and you think about behavioral biology, to go from the actual science of it into acting, because really you're doing the same thing. You're kind of trying to track down what makes someone behave the way they do. And it's just kind of a different way of going about it.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I love that connection.
It's really cool.
It worked. It worked for me. And a lot of it was, that was why I was in DC and Boston after school. I worked at a couple different places after college. And it got to the point where, you know, you can't really do any more post-baccalaureate work. You have to go back to school to get your PhD. And I wasn't ready for 6 more years of school yet.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, I was like, let's do something else for a little while. And I was in Boston, and I had a lot of friends at Emerson, which is a, you know, kind of like NYFA. It's very, or like USC, it's a very film, you know, and film heavy school.
Mm-hmm.
And so I had a lot of friends that were doing like student films, and I had done some acting in high school, but nothing really big, you know, typical stage productions and things.
Mm-hmm.
I was more of a choir and swim geek. But And so I started working on those, and I started going down to New York. I lived on the Chinatown bus. That bus was awesome until it got for safety. But it was like $10 each way down to New York. And I went down there a couple times a week for classes and started doing those films. And then I had a lot of friends that were moving out from Emerson to LA to finish their last semester. And I was like, that sounds like a good idea. Let's do that and see how LA treats me for a while. And if I don't like it after a year, I can go back to school. And never went back to school.
Gee, well, I mean, it sounds like you've been having a hell of a time in LA anyway. You know, I mean, school will always be there should you decide, you know, you want
exactly.
You want to finish it up. So that's awesome. That's a really interesting, I think all of us here kind of have similar stories, like start off doing one thing and then your path just takes you in a completely different direction. Like I definitely did not start out wanting to be a teacher. It just kind of happened, and you know, who knows what the future holds as well. So that's really cool.
That's awesome though. I mean, my favorite teachers from school were the ones who they didn't have to be there, but they wanted to be. And you could always tell. You could always tell.
Yeah, there are certain days where I really absolutely love my job, and other days where I really don't love my job.
Yeah,
there's some where it's great.
From college, you teach high school, and same deal. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
So we have to ask you about the Guild because it's obviously it paved the way for a lot of stuff on the web. I mean, really, it was one of the very first scripted series on the web to ever get that kind of acclaim and web traffic that it, you know, it still generates to this day. So what was that like getting that gig? And did you think it was going to explode the way that it did? Because you came on, what was it, season two?
Season two.
Okay.
Season two. Yes. Yeah. I joined season two as Riley, and that's another story that I'll keep for a second. But I was working at a talent agency at the time. And I saw the breakdown come out for it, and if you don't know what a breakdown is, it's kind of the notice that they put out to all the agents, kind of giving a brief, you know, synopsis of whatever script it's going to be for whatever show or movie, and then a brief breakdown of the characters that they need. And so, you know, they'll put like, male, 30s, heavy set, you know, works in an office, ba-da-da-da-da. And then the agents will go through their roster and pick out the clients that kind of fit that. And they send the clients to the casting director. Casting director picks who they want to come in. And then they go from there and they do auditions. So I saw the breakdown for the Guild. And I hadn't watched the show, but I knew who Felicia was from, I think Dr. Horrible had already come out at that point.
Nice.
So I knew who she was from that, and I knew she had been working on the Guild. I had heard of it, but I'd never actually seen it. And the role was just too fun for Riley. It was the FPS gamer kind of badass, and I was like, I have to go in for this. I wanted to chase it down. I wanted to work with Felicia. I really wanted to kind of get into that world of people that she worked with. And also, I mean, obviously the content, you know, I liked video games. So I was like, I get to play one on TV. That'd be awesome. So I chased that down. I made sure like my agent submitted me. I think I like had them write notes about it. I think I had one of them call and like try to actually pitch me for it. I just wanted to make sure that I was going in for it. I didn't know how big, you know, when I got the audition, that's when I went through and I watched all of season one, I think, in one go before going in. So I kind of had an idea of like the tone of the show and who all the actors were and everything. And Felicia and Sandeep were in the room for the original audition, along with Helen Geyer, the casting director for that project. And they just had me do, you know, kind of like a page long scene. Basically, I think it was the scene that Felicia and I have at the party. And then they had me do a short improv with Sandeep. I think like us being on a date or something.
Oh, your dynamic with him is hilarious. Just
it's
because
great.
Poor Sandeep, like you basically kick his ass throughout the entire season, which is great.
And I went into that audition with like my biggest like ass kicking boots on. So I'm taller than him normally. And I think half the reason I got the role is because how tall I was just funny.
You and I have a lot in common.
Yeah. Hillary's a bit
tall. How tall are you?
I'm 5'10 without the boots.
Hey.
Yeah.
There needs to be more of us.
I know, right?
Hillary wears boots all the time though. Like if you ever see her at a con, she'll be wearing like giant black boots. So she'll be like, she'll be like 6'11" and you'll be like, oh my God.
Cause it's still just fun. I mean, for the longest time, you know, I would never, ever, ever wear heels. And it's like, you know what? Forget it. Cause there's a reason women wear heels. You just honestly, like they look better with a lot of outfits. They feel better. You know, just a lot of reasons. It's not really just to be tall. It just kind of, it works for a lot of various things.
And why should we have to say no to cute shoes? Really?
Exactly. Yes. Never say no to cute shoes.
I agree.
Yes, exactly. You know, Ash.
Ash loves the heels.
Yeah, so it was fun. And I didn't know how big of a character it was going to be. I didn't know how much it was going to appear throughout the whole season, but it was definitely really, really fun. And the story I have for that is, obviously, you know, her name's Riley. It's not a coincidence. The character was based in part off of Rylea.
Oh, cool.
Felicia awesome. Knew Rylea. Yeah. And like Riley out of us is more of the FPS gamer. You know, like all of you, like we'll play Halo and a lot of things like that, but she and like Call of Duty, but Riley is more of is a better FPS gamer than I am.
BioWare RPG geek, right?
Yeah. More like Mass Effect, Gears of War.
Awesome. Those are
two have a lot in common.
Favorites. Yeah, love it.
Those are my jam. Those are totally my jam. And then, of course, you know, WoW and everything, but that's a whole other thing. yeah, but the character was based in part off of Riley, so it was really funny because that's how she and I met. I went into the bar she was working at, and she recognized me from the guild, and she was like, "You're Michelle Boyd," and I'm like, "Yeah, hi." And she said, "I'm Riley." I was
like, that's so surreal.
Huh? So yeah, and thus friendship was born.
So how did that transition to sort of the creation of Team Unicorn? Because I mean, I know the story of how you guys. This is from the print interview that we ran with you guys like almost 3 years ago. But it was a very long time ago. But I know you guys. The first time you were ever really together, you cosplayed as Sailor Moon. But how did the actual idea for the group come about?
Well. Claire and Riley, I think, have been friends the longest. And then Riley and my Lynn met each other, I think, pretty much. Riley's worked at like every bar in LA, I think. and she's got friends from each one. And so I think that's how she met both Claire and my Lynn at different bars that they've both worked at. And then, like I said, Riley and I also met at a bar. So my Lynn and I became friends, I think, like New Year's Eve, like Christmas before that Comic-Con, which was what, like 2010?
Yeah, sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. It was so long ago. We went to the beach and we're coming back and we're just listening to the radio and Katy Perry's California Girls comes on the radio. And my Lynn, you're singing along because we're nerds like that. And it's catchy. And my Lynn's like, "We should do this song about geeky girls." And I was like, "Yeah, what? Okay." and started coming up with lyrics in the car. And it, you know, that kind of turned into the Geek and Gamer Girls title. Yeah. And we were trying to figure it out, you know, and we're going back and forth with lyrics and everything. And we were meeting up. And this was still before Comic-Con. And we were like, we should bring in Claire and Riley on this. Like, it'd be really fun to kind of do it all as a group. And if, you know, if we're going to do music and hey, you know, this sounds fun for music video, and Comic-Con happened around that time. And all of us were kind of becoming friends at that point. And that's when we decided to cosplay as Sailor Moon, which all of us had kind of wanted to do, which was really fun. I'd never done a group costume like that before. It is insane.
Especially at Comic-Con. I mean, you have like 50, you know, 60,000 people now taking pictures. I actually remember seeing you guys at that Comic-Con, but this is before we started Nerd Appropriate. But I remember I was there. I've been going every year since I think 2001. But I remember seeing you guys and being like, "Oh, that was because you." I think there were like six people.
There were six of us.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah. We had all of the Inner Senshi. We've got my sister actually was Sailor Venus, and then we had another friend who was Sailor Mercury, and Riley was Sailor Neptune. But we had all of them.
That's awesome.
All we needed was a guy to walk around with us. It was like our tuxedo mask. It would have been great.
This is something I've never revealed on the podcast, but in 11th grade, I was dating a girl who did Sailor Venus, and she made me dress up as Tuxedo Mask.
Yes!
And I remember walking around our mall back in my hometown as Tuxedo Mask, and everyone just thought I was like, because I had a lot of the other Sailor Scouts with me too, and everyone just thought I was like some sort of pimp or something. They're like, what?
We need pictures of this. I'm demanding.
So, okay. This is all, I don't know if you want to put this on the, we had a terrible, terrible, terrible breakup, like high school style breakup where she tried to run me over with a car and stuff.
Oh my God. What?
Oh yeah. It was amazing. But,
how was that a high school breakup? What
That's not normal.
What?
Wait, you guys all didn't try to run over your exes with cars at some point in your life?
Wait a minute. Ash, you said you were 11 years old.
No, 11th grade. I was not 11th grade.
I was like, this is really getting weird.
He was 11. She was 17.
Timeline is a bit off.
Yeah, you guys didn't. Anyway. So anyway, all of the
song love story.
All of the pictures of like that relationship were lost. They're all gone.
Lost.
So there's no Tuxedo Mask. Yeah. No, right. Yeah. No Tuxedo Mask. But anyway, sorry. Segue.
So Michelle,
Jewel burning of all the photos.
Yes.
Yes. First of all, I have to say it's really weird hearing you talk about doing anything with Mylin. It's really weird for me. I'm like, you're not actually talking about me, but it sounds like it.
easily confused.
Yeah, I'm easily confused. I have to say, I remember the first time I saw the Geek and Gamer Girls video, and I just loved it. And I feel like that and a lot of the things you guys have done since then have done so much for geek girls and geek women, and showing that we don't have to just fit into one particular, you know, type
mold.
Yeah. That you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to look a certain way or you don't have to be a certain way. It's just like, I feel like you can be sexy. It's okay. I think it's great. And I think what you guys are doing is really good.
Thank you. And it's a really weird dynamic, because obviously when that first video came out, you know, we had it kind of turned into a huge deal that we didn't realize was really going to happen. As far as, you know, some women were really offended by it, which, you know, of course was not our intention. It was meant to be a parody. That was kind of, you know, that was always the heart of it. So at the same time, we really did enjoy, you know, kind of just being a little bit, because I mean, I don't know how many of the girls you've met in person, but like, you know, a lot of, we dress like normal girls. We dress, you know, and kind of like sexier sometimes, but that's okay. And it's not meant to be exploitive. It's not meant to, you know, be pandering. It's not meant to do any of those things. It's, you know, we got a lot of people saying, why did they hire models? Why did they, you know, why do they do these girls that don't represent us? And we're like, well, because this is just us. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, anytime you put anything out on the web, it's open for people to comment on, right? So, I actually work at BioWare, and I'm on the community team, so I know pretty well what it's like to deal with negative comments. But I think, you know, yours particularly, because it's so personal, because it's, you know, I represent a brand, whereas you're representing yourself. How do you deal with the negative comments? Do you actually like read them? Do you, you know, how do you deal with that?
We do read them, and what's funny about the, you know, when you say we represent ourselves, it's an interesting thing, because, you know, we go in and we're not just representing ourselves at this point, because the idea was really to kind of have Team Unicorn be its own brand and be kind of like a symbol of, you know, girls just in general. It's okay to like nerdy things, and it's okay. And there are girls out there who, you know, may not necessarily fit the mold of what a nerdy girl is supposed to look like, which also doesn't make any sense. That the entire idea doesn't really make any sense. You know, no one is supposed to look like anything else. You're just supposed to kind of be who you are and look like how you are. It's a little strange for people. It's funny now because, you know, when it first came out, there was a lot of, do geek girls really exist? And now, and maybe I'm just sheltered, but it really doesn't feel like that's a thing anymore. It feels more like it's not about, you know, and if we were doing the song now, I don't know if it would have the same title, because it's not about geek and gamer girls. It's just We're just geeks and gamers. Mm-hmm. That's it. Like, you don't need to differentiate between guys and girls. You're not a geek girl. You're just a geek.
Well, even like, you know, you're talking about how things have changed even since that video came out. But, you know, we all go to a lot of conventions, but in the past decade, the dynamic of those conventions has changed so much.
Dramatic.
Like Comic-Con in 2001, you know, I don't know the percentages, but it was not a whole lot of females were there. Now it is honestly 50-50.
It really is.
I mean, there's no real separation. I think everyone likes the same stuff. And I think it's a great thing. You know, it's a great, my wife's been going for like the past 5 years. She loves it. We love different stuff, but we can still go and, you know, have a great time. So.
Yeah, it's, and a lot of the negative comments obviously will, you know, they'll get you down if you listen to them, but it's balanced by so much positivity. And what I really enjoy about it is the parents who say, oh, my little girls watch the videos and they love what you guys do. And they, you know, and they go to school with a Star Wars lunchbox and they think it's okay now. Those are the best stories. I mean, one of our favorite girls, she was on our zombie holiday video. I think she played my daughter, actually, Ainsley. She's such an awesome little cosplayer. Oh my God.
That was my favorite one of the unicorn videos, by the way. I love the zombie.
That's
holiday.
My favorite. Zombie holiday is my favorite. It's really, I forget whose favorite video, but I know each of us has a different favorite video, and mine's Zombie Holiday. I love that one so much.
Oh, that's great.
Ainsley, her parents are big cosplayers. They're all in, I'm going to kill myself if I get this wrong, but I think her parents are both in the 501st.
Oh, cool.
Her mom may be in the Mandalorian Mercs. And if you don't know what those are, they're kind of the official cosplay groups.
They actually, I think, started here in Central Florida, or at least the 501st did, I think, so.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're amazing. They have very strict regulations about like how their costumes have to be. And she cosplays as a whole bunch of different things. I think she's got more costumes than I do. But it's really fun to see her and like be proud to kind of call herself a unicorn. I love it.
That is cool. It is very cool. So talking about conventions, like I know when you and I were standing outside of the pirate ship, we were kind of, you were talking with my wife and I, and what I really loved about the conversation is like, I'm just here because I love being here. Like you weren't there to plug a product. Like you're just at Comic-Con because Comic-Con is great. What is it about conventions that you like so much? Because I think all of us go for different reasons. Like I would go pretty much no matter what if I was like physically able to.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, right. But what is it about cons that you think, and cons are just growing too, like
they really are. There's so many. I think you go to different cons for different reasons, because each con kind of has its own personality and it has its own, not necessarily theme, but you know, there's different things at each con, you know, none of them are the same. So like I go to San Diego Comic-Con, first of all, because it's San Diego Comic-Con. You have to go.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, it's the, you know, the biggest one that I know really. And it, because obviously it's so close, it's just kind of there. But I go to San Diego Comic-Con, partially because, you know, a lot of stuff that I care about, like, you know, all the movies and TV shows and everything that comes out has all of their kind of breaking news and like and new secret things that they show. And it's really fun to be there and be part of that atmosphere. But you also go because it's really like nerd summer camp.
It is. It is so much.
San Diego Comic-Con feels like nerd summer camp to me. You kind of go, and it's like a recurring thing. You go, and you get to see all these people that you don't get to see a lot during the year because everyone's working on various things. And this is the one time where all of us are in one place, and it's one city, and you don't really have a lot of transportation to go elsewhere. So everyone just sort of congregates in the same areas, especially at night.
Mm-hmm. Just walks around the city. Yeah, it's
just
surreal.
Walks around the city. Yeah, and you're able to kind of just sit and talk with people for, you know, for just hours and actually genuinely catch up with people. And you're not at a really loud bar, and you're not trying to impress everyone with what you're working on. You can just kind of sit there and talk and reconnect with a lot of people that you don't necessarily get to see. And you know, you go to bars and you dance to Journey, and it's great.
Awesome.
And then you go to cons. I mean, I've been to a few others. You know, I go to like
you
I
went to you went to Dragon Con this year, right?
I went to Dragon Con. This is the first year I've ever been to Dragon Con, and I had no idea what to expect.
You have no idea. I think that's the one none of us have been to. So you have to tell us of your Dragon Con adventures.
Dragon Con adventure, which sounds like the best TV series ever. get on it, Sci-Fi. Dragon Con is unique. I've never been to a con like it because I've never been to a con that felt so fan driven.
Yeah.
It really genuinely feels like it's just a group of people that decided to all stay in the same four hotels and dress up for 40.
That's awesome. Did you cosplay at all this year?
I didn't. No, I didn't do anything this year. Honestly, half the fun of Dragon Con is just kind of planting yourself in one place and just people watching, which you can do for hours.
Absolutely.
There was a Han Solo inside of a Solo cup.
What? That's a giant awesome.
Which was amazing.
That is amazing.
I think my favorite though this year, because people get inventive. Two people, I'm not kidding you, cosplayed as the Marriott carpet.
I saw that an article about that. That's yeah. crazy. And then they got a cease and desist from the designer or something.
Oh, did they really? That's insane.
Oh, it's crazy. Yeah. So I guess the carpet maker, I don't even know like who makes carpet. I don't
know. Was upset that their design was being copied.
Yeah, it was like this big internet. I don't know. It was just on. I don't know. There's a bunch of like hubbub about it. So yeah, it was so pretty fun. Amazing.
I mean, really, like first of all, I don't think they're going to do that costume again. So I don't think the cease and desist was really necessary. But secondly, can you imagine writing that letter? Please stop dressing like our carpet.
And the thing is, it's like so bright and horrible.
Yeah, it is.
Sorry.
It's awful. It's so funny. I mean, can you imagine if the Marriott had decided to just change their carpet without telling anyone? I wonder how long it took them to put that costume together.
I don't know. Well, I guess what they were trying to do is they were selling the pattern. Like they had made it in, you know, some kind of visual software. And then they were selling the pattern so that you could infiltrate Dragon Con, which is a really cool idea. And like, you know, people are crawling on the floor.
Yes.
Yeah. Their idea was to get a ton of people to do this. Which is a really funny and awesome idea and kind of shows the spirit of Dragon Con. But I mean, that's something that I do the events for BioWare. And we're looking, we sent a couple people this year, but we're looking at Dragon Con just because it's such a unique show. So yeah, when I read that article, I was like, this is really cool. Like to have fans that are so inventive to come up with dressing as carpet is amazing.
It is.
That's insane because who thinks of that? It's just
I know.
Really surprised about the cease and desist, but I'm almost not because you know you hear stuff like this has happened before, like with I forget who actually started distributing and selling the Jane hats from Firefly.
I remember that.
Once they started cracking down on the actual you know selling and distribution of it, then like Etsy sellers started getting hit with the letters. But you know, I mean, the show's been gone for 11 years, and of course, people have been making the hats for that long, and it's people who are like knitting in their living rooms and selling them on Etsy, and it's like, really, guys, is it that big of a deal? You canceled the show. You gave up the rights. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Yeah. I remember reading about that and being so shocked that they would even bother. You know what I mean? It's like, let people make, they're probably not making a ton of money off Jane hats at this point, but still it's like, let them have a couple meals, you know?
Seriously, I wouldn't think it's not exactly a multi-billion-dollar industry. Like it just let people enjoy their fandom. Dragon Con was funny though, because it was the first convention I'd been to that wasn't in a central convention center. It's held in four different hotels, kind of just the lobbies of these four different hotels, which was so funny because half the time you're just moving from one hotel to the other.
Just walking around, huh?
Just walking around. And it's just, you know, you don't really go beyond those hotels that much. And three of them are actually connected by sky bridges. So I spent the first 3 days figuring out how to get from one hotel to the other. You get very easily turned around.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
There's no, you know, and everything changes. It was really, really fun to just kind of sit there and watch everyone dressing up in cosplay. And I would say it's a good percentage of people, far more than do at a San Diego Comic-Con. It's just kind of, you felt weird and out of place wearing normal clothes. which was really funny. So I think if I go back to Dragon Con, I definitely will dress up again. I'll just probably, you know, wear something that kind of covers my face. But I was thinking, now I'm not going to say it just in case I decide to do that. But there's a few ideas that
you
I have.
Say it when we're not recording.
I was definitely looking forward to possibly cosplaying next year. And then all the panels, you know, they do have people come out. Like they had a lot of the Battlestar cast there for one panel. And I think there was like Miracle was there from Dollhouse.
Awesome.
But I don't know what panel she was doing. But like, you know, voice actors were there. I know Phil Lamar was there. So there are some actors and people that show up, to the panels, but it's not like they're really revealing anything about the show. It's really just kind of, again, very fan driven, and it's almost all Q&A. Which is really kind of cool. And it's a much more interactive experience than I feel like you get at San Diego Comic-Con. And it's very, I don't want to say small, it's just more intimate. Which I think matters to a lot of people. There's a big difference when you go into a room that only holds like, you know, 50 to 100 people versus going into these rooms at Comic-Con, which has you among like a group of 1,000.
That's,
you know,
why we always kind of sing the praises of Nerd HQ, Zachary Levi's thing, because like seeing the mini panels that he has there are just incredible because it's so small. It's like 250, 300 people in a tiny little space. And like those are some of my favorites for the past, you know, 2-3 years going to those. I love those.
It's very, very similar to that. It's very similar to that format. And I did go to one this year. I went to the Orphan Black one.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we heard really good things about that panel in particular.
Oh, my gosh. Orphan Black is hands down probably my favorite show of this year.
Oh, I need to see it.
Oh, it's too.
It's just incredibly good. And Tatiana Maslany is just genius.
Doesn't she play like a bunch of different characters?
She plays like 8 different people. And they're you know, obviously it's based around clones, and she's amazing. And she just, the way that she goes about, and you know, and a lot of it has to do with the technology and of the show as well, because they'll put 3 of them, all her, in one shot. And it's done seamlessly. You truly, truly cannot tell. And a lot of that is obviously the technology, but a lot of it is also just her skill as an actress. And it's just everything from the tics and the way that she moves and the way that she speaks, it's brilliant to watch. It's very, very cool. And it's cool to see the other actors who have to interact with the same actress, but as a different character that their character now feels differently about. So it's very, very masterfully done. And I just kind of wanted to see the, you know, just the actors up close. Like, you're just kind of curious about it.
Cool.
And I love that.
And I love the idea behind the whole idea of Nerd HQ, that you can kind of go and have somewhere outside of the convention to hang out. And, you know, it's nice because if you don't have a ticket to Comic-Con, because those are getting harder and harder to get,
yes, absolutely,
you can still go to panels and go and hang out somewhere and play video games and still kind of feel like you're part of the experience without actually getting into the convention.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was a genius idea. And like, I think for the past couple of years when it was in sort of like more bar-like locations, like we would just go and like have a meal and like hang out, because like they had charging stations and it was like a super relaxing, fun place to just relax. So
it's a nice place to go and kind of like, you know, just de-stress from the craziness of the convention.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
I love that there are more and more of those offsite things, because I feel like that does pull some of the people away from the convention center, and that makes the convention center feel not so incredibly claustrophobic.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, I don't know how much bigger it can get at this point, just because there's some days where the floor is just like, it's like a mosh pit for
you
like,
you don't move.
Yeah, you don't. You just shuffle everywhere. It's kind of crazy.
Exactly.
Well, awesome. I'm glad that you told us about Dragon Con. I can't. It's so hard because it's the same time as PAX, so I have to do this. Like,
yes.
I don't know why they do that to us, but anyway.
And I love PAX. I love the Penny Arcade guys. I love everyone that shows up to that. I love all of the indie games that I get to find out about at PAX. You know, I think my main game, what was it when I went last year, was Heist. Which I really loved. But and there's a game, and I don't remember what it's called, but you play it by strumming a guitar, But the whole point of the game is it kind of looks like Asteroids, but you're going backwards in time.
What? I don't know what this is. I'm
gonna that sounds either. Amazing.
If you went forward in time, and it's okay, so it's, and this is going to be really badly because you can't see me either, so you can't see the wonderful visuals I'm doing with my hands right now. It's kind of like a spaceship looking avatar, and it moves up and down on the screen in just a vertical thing, but you're going backwards, so you're kind of recapturing the laser shots that you've shot before. Like, what? You see the laser shot coming at you, and you have to move the spaceship to intercept them.
That is really cool.
That's
awesome.
You move the spaceship
by strumming a guitar.
That is, see, I love, really that's fun. So neat about PAX and the Indie Mega Booth and everything that they're doing, is you get to see some really innovative stuff that doesn't really exist anywhere else. So try and go to East, because we'll all be at East doing all sorts of crazy stuff. So
actually, Mylan on the call with us right now is, she works for an indie developer and made a game. So you guys should probably chat.
Yeah.
What's the name of the game?
It's called Strange Loves Vampire Boyfriends.
That's fantastic.
I'll send you a copy if you want. It's a choose your own adventure style game book.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So you can like date vampires or slay them or become one, whatever you want.
I chose to date them personally.
Me too. I'm all about dating vampires.
I just over you with their car and burned all of you as tuxedo mask.
Yeah, right.
That's right.
Yeah, but there are no pictures because we burned them. No.
So sad about that. So speaking of horror, you mentioned your horror shorts, and I'm so curious about how producing is compared to your acting career.
It's very different. You don't realize, and it took me like a good 5 years to kind of figure out. I was like, what the hell is a producer? Like, what do you do? And the answer is everything. You're kind of, you know, especially on a smaller project that you're running yourself, you're in charge of, you know, kind of budgeting out and figuring out how much everything is going to cost and figuring out who you're going to hire for lights, who you're going to hire for sound, who you're going to hire for as a DP, who you're going to, you know, crafty. You have to figure out craft service and feeding everybody. You have to figure out shot lists ahead of time. You have to, you know, and figure out how much time that's going to take. Kind of you do everything, at least for, you know, this particular type of project where this is going to kind of be like a, you know, a baby of mine where I've never directed anything and I've never produced anything on my own. Obviously all of us get together and kind of produce the Team Unicorn shorts, but you know, you kind of get to break that up between people. But so at least like I have a little bit of experience going into it, but I also have kind of a clear idea of how I want everything to kind of look. And I think that's where you kind of have to start. And you
so exciting though. That's so cool that you're doing that. I mean, it's a really brave thing to do, because wearing that many hats at the same time is going to be super challenging, but that's
the
awesome.
The nice thing is about this community is that everyone is really super supportive, because everyone is here in LA, I think, you know, for lack of a less cheesy term, to follow a dream. They want to make stuff. And I like that this city is kind of, it's more about creators rather than consumers. And it's very, very easy to fall into this consumer only trap. Where, you know, all you do is kind of take in, as opposed to put out. And it's funny because maybe I've just been in an LA bubble for so long, but I feel like all the people you talk to here, the moment you start talking about, you know, I'm not making anything, I'm not happy right now, everyone immediately gets what you mean. Because if you're not creating something, and I think this goes for just people in general, honestly, I think most people are just happiest when they're creating something. And that's why I didn't really continue. I did a review show very, very briefly called Overdue Reviews, and I didn't stick with it because I didn't want to be talking about stuff other people had made. I wanted to make something else that, well, I guess that other people can talk about, but I don't know.
No, it totally makes sense. Like, there is something, like, you know, that's honestly why we do this little show and why we've been doing it for so many years. It feels good to create something and put it out there, you know, and it's a really wonderful and fulfilling feeling to actually have something kind of floating around, you know.
Exactly. And at the end of the day, when, you know, you can just be like, I made this. Look back at this thing. Look at this thing that I made.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, and for better or for worse. And obviously, you know, everything you work on is kind of a learning experience. So it could tank horribly and be bad, but I will hopefully be learning how to do something else better.
But
and I liked the idea. And I think a lot of them will be very simple to shoot. They'll be called penny horrors. So look for those, hopefully.
Can you tell us anything about the...
Talking about it on the podcast is also to give myself a kick in the ass that I'm like, I have to do it.
You have to. Yes, yeah, now
absolutely.
I do.
Now that this will be out there. So what's the general premise? Can you talk about that without spoiling anything?
Yeah, of course. I don't know if I mentioned before, there was the Reddit thread of... basically, there was a Reddit thread about a month or two ago, where they... put out just a Reddit thread saying, write a scary story in 2 sentences. And there were a lot of responses, and there was a lot of really good and really creepy ideas.
Yeah, really scary.
Yeah. And there was a lot of them where I was like, oh, I can totally see how this would work on screen. I can absolutely see how to build this up. And oh, there'd be a really good fake scare there that we could do. So a lot of the shorts, which, you know, none of them will be more than a couple minutes, is mostly going to be just like kind of a lot of like setup for whatever premise it is. And then kind of giving you not even necessarily a scare. A lot of them are just kind of creepy. There's what I liked about a lot of the stories was it wasn't just going to be like a jump scare. It was just kind of it's going to take you a second to figure out why it's creepy. And
that's
once
awesome.
You do, then you won't be able to sleep that night, which by the way, after reading that thread and, you know, getting excited and doing a little bit of research on really some scary stuff on YouTube, it was really hard to go to bed.
Yeah, there's some scary stuff out there.
So it's kind of covers and just kind of, you know, like just had the covers up to my chin. I'm like, okay, nothing's over the edge of the bed.
That's
so
awesome.
It's kind of like intelligent horror.
Yeah.
Yes. A lot of them were.
I love that.
A lot of the stories were. And it was, that's what I liked about it. And I like that, you know, there's scenarios that you can put together. A lot of them will be very simple to shoot. A lot of them take place in houses. And some of them will be a little bit more difficult. You know, I'm going to need like a hospital room for one of them and, you know, things like that.
Cool. That's very, very cool.
So that's why the Kickstarter idea is hopefully what the idea is that I'll film one of them, you know, probably the easiest one to just kind of get out there. Kind of give people an idea of the tone that I'm going for and what all the shorts are going to kind of be like, and then use the money to fund the production of all of the rest of them. And I have about, I think, around 18 or 20 ideas.
Oh, that's so cool. That's so very cool. Awesome. So you don't, I'm assuming since the Kickstarter isn't up yet, you don't have like the link and stuff to share, but we can put that in the show notes. And so
yes.
When people are watching this, there'll be a link in the show notes. So.
Yay.
So that's super cool. So before we get out of here, I just wanted to say I watched a bunch of the Game Changers the other day.
Oh, yay!
Game Changers was awesome. I don't know if it's still going to be around or what's going on with it, but the Parkour Bear and like the Parkour Bear, I literally almost fell out of my seat with Parkour Bear just because of the sound effects they added for Parkour Bear. Like as he was chasing you guys was just hilarious, and the dynamic between you guys also incredible, very very funny stuff.
Thank you.
And I have to say,
I
am so jealous of the jetpack that you got to fly.
Oh my gosh, that was insane.
Yeah, it looked terrifying though, because I know me, like I'm not the most coordinated person. I did not grow up swimming and like doing things with my body. What that sounds like.
Whoa.
Well then. But I did not grow up being the most athletic person. So I know if I tried the jetpack, I would have been the person that was like submerged underwater. You know?
Which you could do just as it was.
Yeah.
Which was crazy. You could actually like submarine under the water with this thing on your back, which was crazy, you know, feel like Aquaman for 5 seconds.
That is very, very cool.
Yeah, but less lame. So we had, the jetpacks were crazy. There's a lot of effort that goes into just holding your arms up, honestly. That it kind of became the more tiring thing, especially once we mounted paintball guns on them.
That's awesome.
It was really cool. It's just like, we don't think the jetpacks are cool enough. Let's put paintball guns on them and hunt each other.
That was incredible. It looked like so much fun. Like I had honestly never seen that particular device before, like style of jetpack. So I was like, what the hell is this? And then I was like, oh wow, this is really kind of crazy. It's really cool.
Yeah, and they're a fully functioning company. Anyone who wants to can go and take the jetpacks out and go over water. And yeah, Ryan was definitely the best one out of all of us that could do it. It's just, especially once you're up there and your arms get tired, the slightest motion of your arms translates to just this huge movement from the jetpack. So it was very difficult to kind of keep under control, especially the longer you were up there.
Yeah.
And it was, but it was really, really fun. And I was really happy that Red 5 was just as excited about all of the stuff as we were, to kind of let us try these things out. I know they want the show to come back. I think, you know, I think our next thing that we were going to try is like a Mario Kart race car driving thing.
Oh, cool.
Which will be so fun. Parkour Bear, freaking Parkour Bear. So I was the only one that he caught on the obstacle course.
I know, I saw that. You were
don't
so close,
see
though.
It in the show. But I was so mad he caught me that I punched him in the face.
That was awesome. Mad
that they didn't have a good camera angle on that, because I was really happy about punching him in the face. We were shooting that show overnight, and we started about 8 o'clock at night, because obviously, you know, they run the studio during the day.
Yeah.
And we were going until about 6 o'clock in the morning. So by the end of that shoot, we were a little punchy.
I bet. I
mean, in every sense of the word. Yeah,
literally.
Yes.
Yeah, all of those look like a lot of fun. Like the zombie one was a lot of fun too. So I hope to see it come back. I really enjoyed it. I thought the production value was top notch too. Like the way it was shot was great.
They put a lot of work and a lot of effort into it, and they made it look like a genuine TV show that you could easily see on any TV show. And I hope that if they don't continue to go forward with the show, maybe they can, you know, push it out to somebody else so it continues to get done. I just like the idea of it. They were going for a very like kind of Top Gear but with video games feel for the show. And of course, like Lee Rerman and Ryan Welsh are just fantastic to work with. They were both really, really fun. I'm bad at everything. Except lock picking. I apparently had a very natural skill and talent for that.
I always tell people it's because us tall folk, our center of gravity is a little bit higher.
Yes,
so
that's totally why. That's why.
It's scientific. See,
it
I
is.
Can prove
it's
it.
It's science. It's science.
Exactly.
Well, we are about out of time. Do you have anything else you want to plug, Michelle, or any other projects or secrets or anything coming up?
No, unfortunately, no. There's a couple projects that I would love to talk about, but
once you come on the show, the door remains open and you will return. It's just kind of like,
yes.
You will come back.
Yeah, you can't get out now.
They always come back.
Oh, God. The black hole of Nerd Appropriate.
Yes,
trust exactly. me.
Yep.
Trust me.
Yep.
They suck you in, they'll suck you in too.
Yep. That's what we do.
That's fantastic. Oh, thank you guys for having me
Absolutely.
On.
Absolutely. Where can people find you social media wise?
Social media wise, everything is pretty much Michelle Boyd, which is with one L. So MICHELE, and Boyd is BOYD. It's MichelleBoyd.com, Michelle Boyd on Twitter. I think my Facebook is Michelle Boyd Online. And yeah, pretty much it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. That was awesome. So much
fun. Thank you guys.
Okay, we are back. Thank you guys for listening to our chat with Michelle. She was a lot of fun, and hopefully she comes back on in the future and hangs out. That'll be awesome. And definitely keep your eyes peeled for her Kickstarter. We'll have a link in the show notes for you guys to go and check out her upcoming project that she was talking about on the show. Scott, you have lots of news this week.
Yeah. You know what else is exciting and interesting?
What's that?
News.
The new console releases are coming. That was the answer to the question, by the way.
Yeah.
So Sony released a very comprehensive FAQ regarding the pretty much anything that you might want to know about the PS4. Here we are, maybe about 2 weeks ahead of its release at this point. I feel like and obviously this would never happen, but I feel like I would rather have read this than watched a 1 hour presentation 5 months ago.
I totally agree.
You know what I mean? Cause it basically tells you everything. And, you know, it's like what, you know, what controllers will work, what peripherals will work, like how will game sharing work? Like how does streaming work and all that other stuff, you know?
It answers essentially all the questions that you may have had without someone screwing up the presentation of said information.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I guess the thing that's been creating a little bit of buzz around the gaming blogosphere is the fact that it's not going to be, at least initially, not going to support MP3 or CD playback, and it's not going to be a DLNA device. You can't stream your media from your computer to the PS4. Initially.
But honestly, when's the last time you put a CD in your PlayStation or your Xbox? And be like, I'm going to listen to a CD.
I don't know. I mean, the MP3 thing, who knows? DLNA. I really think this is an early play to get people to subscribe to things like Music Unlimited, which is Sony's music service. I know they have a video service as well. I'm sure there will be partner services on said device. Interestingly enough, Xbox came, you know, Microsoft came back, you know, the next day and was like, yes, we will support CD playback and MP3s and, you know, whatever.
Yeah, of course.
And then, you know, because
they have to
like
stay competitive.
Yeah. But, you know, because like the hearts and minds like have already been lost to Sony, like the reaction has been like, oh, yeah, good timing on that announcement. And you're like, really? Come on. Yeah. Like the PS4's original announcement was predicated on timing, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
like that's been the whole angle of the two companies since the beginning.
It's so funny, I got interviewed this week for my school newspaper. Mm-hmm. The students came and interviewed me for about the console war, and I was like,
yeah,
I was so like, there is no war.
Yeah,
there is
exactly
only peace. Like, this is something the media has created, and all they wanted is me to be like, you know, they wanted me to pick one, and I'm like, yeah, I'm not picking one. Like, there is no war, it's bullshit.
Yeah.
So anyway,
you know, one machine does some things, one machine does other things. There's, a, you know, probably like a 75% overlap.
Yeah, absolutely.
In the middle. It's just exciting. I mean, you know, forget about all this. Like, by the time the two systems come out, it'll just be exciting to have new consoles, you know?
I agree.
And all of this, like, weird news and posturing, like, all of this stuff will be quickly forgotten, you know? Because I barely remember anything from, like, the announcements that preceded the release of the Xbox 360, for instance, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We don't even think about stuff like that anymore, including the Blade interface, you know?
Oh, man, I remember that so well.
Blades.
So tell me about this Stick of Truth. What's going on with that game?
Yeah, well, it seems as if the South Park Stick of Truth, which originally was a THQ title and then became an Ubisoft title, was slated to release somewhere around the time of the new next gen console releases, and now it's been delayed until like something like March 2014.
Now, do you think that they are going to make this a release for both the 360 and the Xbox One? Do you think it's going to be current gen and next gen?
Man, I don't see how you can't. I just feel like it would look so bizarre to have a game come out that late and then just be like, oh no, we were really just working on this game the whole time.
Yeah It's strange because like the transition between console generations is always so challenging because it takes about a year for people to finally be like, okay, well, we're not putting anything out for 360 anymore. And then, you know, you have a lot of consumers that are sitting there with both a 360 and an Xbox One or PS3 and PS4 all on their shelf at the same time because they can't really get rid of them, and it's just obnoxious. So it's hard, I think, for developers to try and figure out when is a good time to actually release a title like this. Because if South Park were to release that, or if Ubisoft were to release South Park this month, alongside the new console launches, it might get lost in the shuffle, which is, I think, what they're afraid of.
Yeah, you know? They would get probably very little, you know, very little buzz about the release of this game. Like, that news would be, like, steamrolled immediately, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Even though people are really excited for this game, I think, you know, it would probably be in their best interest to put it out alongside, you know, without the shadow of the new consoles to kind of hover over it, you know?
You know, I mean, obviously, I would like to see as many games as possible come out for the new consoles. Obviously, they, you know, both companies have said they're still going to support their current machines for, you know, the next few years. So it's like a really delicate balance to like appease both sets of people, I think. Mm-hmm. But it's just unfortunate that this game was delayed because, like you said, I think a lot of people are looking forward to it, myself included. I'm just becoming nervous, I guess.
No, I'm right there with you. You know? Yes. Speaking of nervous, this is my Hillary transition, The Seventh Guest.
Yeah, man. Somewhere, all of a sudden, like in the past few days, a Kickstarter campaign has appeared for The Seventh Guest 3. Which would be the sequel to, obviously, Seventh Guest and 11th Hour. Some very classic PC puzzle games that utilized like sort of like that height of 3D technology at the time with full motion video overlaid on top of it.
Lots of FMV in there too, right?
Yeah, and what's really fascinating about this Kickstarter campaign is that the game that they're proposing to make is going to be in that same spirit of those games. Like, they propose, like, 3D rendered environments, full motion video. Again, they brought the same actor back to play Henry Stauff.
That's awesome.
You know, there's going to be like a new mansion, and they're saying that this time there's going to be puzzles in the mansion just like there were before, but then the mansion itself is going to be like this meta puzzle where you have to do something to the mansion in order to solve it to make your escape out of the mansion.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's cool. So you're very excited about this, obviously. This is sort of like your...
I am cautiously optimistic.
Oh, boy.
Because I think the way that the Kickstarter is proposed is very ambitious. I think they have a target right now of $435,000.
Okay.
And they also kind of... They touch upon this idea that they're going to make the game more mature in terms of the content. And I think the approach is, and you can even watch the video. The guy basically says, like, hey, that game came out a long time ago. If you're watching this Kickstarter, you probably know what's up. Like, we're adults. You're adults now. We're going to make this game, like, a little bit more intense in terms of the content.
That's pretty cool. I like the sound of that because it was tame before.
Yeah.
You know?
But Henry Stauff is a creepy fellow. So I don't know where that's going to go, but I feel like it's going to go to a very weird and dark place.
Awesome.
Yeah, so I'm, you know, keeping my eye on the Kickstarter, looking to see what's going on. They have a very detailed project page, and, you know, I have like a sense of nostalgia for this game, so I'm really excited to see what happens. I would certainly like to play another game in this series, so.
Awesome.
Really, really, really interesting. So there you go.
Cool.
Any other news? Should we move on?
That's it. We're done. That's the whole episode.
No, I'm gonna do a quick NAFL update since
Hillary
isn't here. Yeah, okay. We're not gonna do our pick 'em.
Okay.
But I will continue to update our listeners on our Nerd Appropriate Fantasy Football League, which is in its inaugural season. We hope to grow next season to invite other people that are maybe curious about fantasy football, have never played before but want to get into it. You know, and just kind of like promote it as something that nerds enjoy doing and sort of maybe take away some of the stigma associated with, like, you know, you can be a gaming nerd, you can be a fantasy football nerd, but we're all nerds and we're all sort of together in this. So that's the idea behind this fantasy football league.
Yes.
And it's kind of like, you know, for someone that doesn't follow sports or play fantasy sports, it's kind of like an RPG in a sense where you pick players from all teams and try to build a team yourself to, you know, beat your opponents each week in head-to-head matchups. So with that being said, let's take a look at the rankings this week. My team is in second place.
Nice.
And then there are seven other teams in the league. So I think that's the only thing I wanted to highlight right now is that I am in second place.
Who's winning? Who's in first?
That would be Rex's Warriors is currently in first place. And I'm playing Rex's Warriors this coming week.
Luck be with you.
Yeah. So it'll be a clash of the Titans. And I think that's Echap.
And who's in last place?
Let's see. Last place would be poor Dwyer Straits again. Who I believe is Platinum Fist.
Oh, it's Platinum Fist. Okay.
Yeah. So, and then we've got Matt, who is in seventh place, second to last.
Yeah. Well, that's what he gets for eating all that candy.
Yep. You know? Nate Hales, sixth place, third to last. Just saying.
Yeah.
I also like to give a shout out to Karen Weeks for not setting her lineup last week. Really helped me out a lot. led my team to a fairly easy victory. Comfortably now in second place, and maybe next week I'll be in first place.
Awesome.
All right, so that's your nerd sports update for the week. Ash, I think it's time to take us home.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for listening to episode 127 of the Rated NA podcast. As always, you can reach us on Twitter, and that's at NerdAppropriate on Twitter. You can email us directly, and that is Ash, Matt, Hillary with one L, or Scott at NerdAppropriate.com. Or you can go to our Facebook page, /NerdAppropriate, and leave us a message there. We're going to be back next week with another special episode.
You going to say bye?
Oh, bye, guys. Let's do it.
Who's gonna do this?
Wow, this is a great intro already. Damn it, what do we do?
What are we supposed to do when Matt's not here?
This is so weird. You wanna just wing it? Let's just
I don't
think
it. You've ever done it before. Do you wanna do it?
I don't know. Sure, let's try it.
You're gonna have to just make this up some catchphrase.
All right. I have to make up a catchphrase.
That's I don't know. You can't say all right. You can
no,
say...
I'm not gonna say all right. That's too weird. Yeah. All right makes it so easy.
Well, I guess you'll just have to say all right in your own way then.
Here we go.